Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Now, we all know that going sober isn't easy. It may not be your first attempt. You may find moments of frustration, but in those moments, that's your opportunity to challenge any thoughts or beliefs that you hold about alcohol and to turn your focus to the benefits you're going to gain. And so that's why I've spent time listening to every single episode and cherry-picking the best bits. I'm obviously going to signpost you here to revisit the Dry January series I did last year, where I focused one episode a day on topics that were relevant to sobriety, advice, tips. It's packed full of useful information for you, and it's a really good listen alongside this podcast. It's still relevant, it's still incredibly good and comprehensive. So if you'd like to look back at that, just head back to this time last year on your podcast feed. So let's start off by talking about the commitment and consistency principle. We're drawn to be consistent as human beings. We find consistency very attractive, and equally we find inconsistency unattractive. So that's why it's so important to commit. Commit loud and proud to Dry January. Tell people. Don't start with doubt, start with confidence. And it doesn't matter if you've done Dry January before, or maybe you've done it and not finished the month, because this time is going to be different. And this time could be the time that it works for you and change your life completely. I've got lots of resources to support you this month, from the Sober Rebel online resilience course, which is self-paced and you can find on my website. At the end of this episode, I'll give you a discount code to get 30% off. And then I've got self-hypnosis recordings as well as my audiobook. Now, self-hypnosis is an amazing way to reprogram some of those deep-rooted beliefs about alcohol and your subconscious. And in order for you to enjoy the process of going sober or doing this Dry January month and getting the most out of it. So let's head now to the episode that I've chosen for today. This is the very first episode of my dear friend Pearl, and it was aired on the 25th of July 2023. Now, we covered some amazing topics in this episode, from sex, food and rock and roll. It was a brilliant way to start off the Sober Rebel podcast. We talk about our relationship with food, with dieting, with healthy eating, and how that changes in sobriety. Because this is a month, most people do a complete reset after the excesses of Christmas. And it's actually really interesting to realise how there's a knock-on effect of removing alcohol. You start to treat yourself and think about other areas of your health in different ways. I hope you enjoy it. Which brings us so neatly onto what I've asked you to come on here to talk about, which is three things that you feel have shifted for you in sobriety. It could be internal, external, it could be about your life, things you're doing, but things that have been a positive change, because we can often over-focus on this idea of missing out when we're not missing out on anything. You've put it brilliantly.
As I've sort of described to you, because alcohol, it just punctuated every single aspect of my daily living. So there are many, many things that I could have thought of for this list, but I've gone right back down to the basic needs that we have as a human and how alcohol affected those things for me. The first one I'd like to talk about is food. So this, you know, we could probably talk for hours and hours about this, but I've got a few things that I've noticed to do with food. So when I was drinking, I was known as the hostess with the mostest, and entertaining and having parties enabled my drinking. So I would, it's Wednesday, let's celebrate Wednesday, come over and have a party. You know, it got kind of stupid like that. That facilitated my drinking. So I would also make really bad food decisions if I wasn't entertaining. If it was a normal day, let's say, I would start drinking. I would miss out on family meal times. I would think that it was a waste of time to stop drinking and join in the rest of the family and have food. I would eat later. You know, I wasn't rolling around drunk. I was kind of topping myself up, but I just lost my appetite and didn't really see the point of eating. Then I would end up eating very late at night or not at all. Then I would make really poor choices to do with food the next day. I remember one weekend, you know, I went on a bit of a bender. This was when children weren't involved, but I ate 2 pickled onions in 3 days because I was drinking so much and I almost killed myself. And I can't eat pickled onions anymore. So one thing I can do now is like eat at regular intervals.
That's a bonus.
It's terrible, isn't it? But I don't know about you. I've always found everything in my life difficult to moderate. So what I would do is go on a crazy diet as well. I would diet for 2 weeks at a time, cut out carbs, do all that. But I would never cut out alcohol.
No,
like, that
never
could
alcohol.
Be the problem.
Do you remember the Atkins diet? I remember in my 20s.
Yes.
It was a massive thing, wasn't it? I think Jennifer Aniston or somebody, I was a big Friends fan and everybody lost weight and looked amazing on Atkins. I look back now, I looked amazing. I didn't need to do that, but I had an eating disorder. And so it was anything I could use to label it. And they talked about vodka being, is it carb free? Well, I can't stand vodka. I never have been able to drink vodka, but I actually tried to just to get the drug. Now I look back on it. Yeah. My nightly top up or my every other night top up at that point. And I just couldn't do it. I just did not like vodka.
I know. And isn't it funny that they know that people literally can't function on a diet or in daily living without being able to have some sort of choice of alcohol. So they say, yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I always looked after my basic needs, I would say. I did eat and I did do that. But I had very disordered eating. And that came from, I think, the 80s and 90s diet culture when I was a child. And just these emaciated.
I grew up in the same era. Yeah.
I was offsetting my alcohol calories by exercising and then not eating proper portions or, as I say, very disordered eating. It was incredibly unhealthy. But I remember being in the gym working out how many calories I needed to burn off to have a couple of cans of lager.
You're in negative equity with your health. You're trying to go to the gym and actually you might get to a zero. Whereas now that we don't drink and we're making better food choices, you start on the zero and then you can level up and build. Whereas before, you're just on the back foot all the time.
Yeah.
I always thought that I really liked cooking as well. And by getting sober, I've realized that I don't. I'm very good at cooking because I've spent a lot of time practicing it, which is the same with any skill, isn't it? You know, with sobriety, you get better at it because you're practicing it. With cooking, it was the same. And so I had this belief that I loved cooking, but what I really loved was drinking while I was cooking or using dinner parties or whatever as a reason to drink. When I got sober, I thought, oh my God, I don't want to cook. That's a major trigger for me. A lot of my drinking happened at home. There are a lot of people that say, I'm not going to go to the pub or go to the bar because that's a trigger for me. My entire house was a trigger for me because that's where a lot of my drinking took place. So what I had to change in sobriety was, well, first of all, I couldn't go to the supermarket for 6 months because I didn't want to walk down the aisle of death, I call it. I said, I'm really sorry, I can't go to the supermarket. I can now. I've done a little bit of dipping my toes in the water and exposure therapy, something?
Yes, it is exposure therapy.
I need to ask you, you're the therapist. Yeah. So I thought, this is stupid. I have to go to the supermarket at some point. But to start with, because my sobriety was so fragile, I had to protect it like a bird on its eggs. I had to look after my sobriety. So I didn't go to the supermarket and I pretty much stopped cooking because for me, that was like cook and drink in the hand. So
did you change your association with that? Did you have a different drink or did you just not cook? I'd say I'm not cooking. Somebody else can do the cooking.
For the first 6 months, supermarket and cooking was pretty much off the table. If I did cook, I would do it at a different time of the day. So I might prepare things in the morning and bulk cook for the week, knowing that when it got to the evening, I absolutely would not be able to do it. So I really had to change my routine.
That is a really good tip, because even though I didn't have as strong an association, I still had a really strong association with a glass of wine, cooking a meal in the evening. I did have that association. So for anybody that's maybe struggling at that time of day, doing something differently, batch cooking or slow cooking, is a good way just in those early days, because it doesn't last. It really doesn't last like that.
I was so very fortunate to have a wonderful support system that could help me, but there are people out there that don't. And, you know, it's all about employing strategies that are going to help you, because these little big triggers come up without any warning. And I'm thinking, why am I feeling so harassed having to cook? Oh, it's because I associate it with alcohol. So then you have to work your way around it and find ways to do it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love food. I especially love it when other people cook for me. When I travel, I'm always up for trying new things. It was a real sticking point for me. And I really had to acknowledge that and unpick it all, because we need food to survive, don't we?
I always have loved cooking, but I will confess that I used to spend most of my evening in the kitchen taking ages to cook, because it meant I was just out of sight, out of mind, glass of wine, little sippy sippy, little dancey dancey. You know, it was every night was a party. Yeah. So I can completely associate with that. And so what have you found that you do enjoy instead of cooking? Because if that was your major passion, then what have you replaced it with?
I can cook now. And there are certain things that I enjoy doing. So what I try and do now is make it more of a family activity and get other people involved. So I will sit there and I'll, you know, I'll put music on, and we make it a different event is what we've done. It's a completely different show, the whole cooking thing. Or we'll go, you know, I live in Brussels. We ride our bikes to the boulangerie in the morning at the weekend, and we'll eat our breakfast there. And we just have completely changed the whole setting.
But then it soon becomes quite normal to you, doesn't it? You create these new routines and you think, actually, cycling to the boulangerie, look at me, you're French. Ooh la la. It's the only word I know because you said it. Doing things like that and going, God, aren't mornings brilliant? Or isn't going out for a coffee in the morning absolutely fantastic? And it doesn't always have to revolve around those same reward systems that we used for years. And it opens up more rewards, loads more rewards.
Major senses of achievement and all the way through the day. And I'll do something, and not, you know, if we're talking about cooking, I'll perform a task in the kitchen. I go, oh, that was great. I didn't even think about having alcohol, or I can just do all this stuff without alcohol. You know, I couldn't wash up without alcohol next to me. That's how bad it was. So now, just to be able to do any menial task, I'm like, yeah, you go, girl.
It just permeates gradually over time, doesn't it? It permeates different activities. And you think, how on earth did alcohol sneak into this activity? How on earth now just chopping vegetables remind me of having a glass of wine in my hand, or turning up to a holiday and pitching up a motorhome like we do? Why is that suddenly now associated with cracking open a beer? It's silly.
You don't even have to be drinking it. Just the thought and the action of thinking about it permeates the activity. So you might be thinking, oh, I'm quickly going to get this done so I can drink afterwards. Or, oh, I feel shit trying to do this because I'm hungover, or I need a drink. So it's just not just the act of drinking, it's the act of thinking about drinking, which took up all my time.
So what is life like now without that constant niggle in your mind about drinking?
It's just absolute liberation. That word doesn't even describe it. Just absolute liberation. I went kayaking recently, and the alcohol menu was bigger than the food menu in the cafe at the place that I was at, by this big lake. And because I'm an alcoholic, I have this radar and I can see what everybody's drinking, how fast they're drinking it, who's leaving stuff in their glass. And I was thinking, I'm kind of enjoying this in a perverse way, because this has nothing to do in my life anymore. And I'm not here wishing that I can go and have a drink or feeling hungover. It just enforces what I want to do when I see others doing that. They might be happy enough. That's up to them. And I just want to say, I don't judge anybody by the choices they make, because you're my people. I know what it's like. You know, there are a lot of people that seemingly don't have problems with alcohol and they can go and have a beer, but that's not me. So when
no,
I
it's not me either.
No, I see people doing that and I think, yeah, whatever. But I'm so chuffed that I don't even have those thoughts anymore. And if someone had told me that years ago, I wouldn't have believed them. I thought it was so ingrained in me. I would have thought, no, that could never happen to me. I can't imagine my life without it.
And you are free now. And that's the thing, isn't it? That freedom that you feel, you never, ever expect to feel it. When you're in the start, the early days of sobriety, you're hoping to feel it. You're hoping that someday not every thought is going to turn to whether you are or aren't drinking, even if you don't pick up a drink. But it's about then that time that you go, do you know what? I haven't thought about it. Or I don't envy that person sat next to me with their half a beer. You know, what is a half pint anyway? I never, ever had a half measure. But
no.
You don't envy it. And that's the thing I've noticed, is the reaching that point where you're not even, there's no fear of missing out. There's no, I am absolutely happy. Obviously that phrase, joy of missing out, very happy if that is joining in to miss out. I'm good with that.
Yeah, me too. I'll be in that gang. I'm well up for being a fully fledged member of that group. I'm up for that.
So if you were to summarize then how your attitude to food, obviously you've discussed the fact that you've decided that you're not the person who wants to spend all their time in the kitchen. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely not. How would you summarize the difference then with your attitude to food as a drinker versus now as a sober person?
Well, it's like night and day. So yeah, all of this dysfunctional behavior and thoughts I had around food have gone, and I can make more healthy choices. I can moderate my intake of different foods. I never deny myself anything. And it's not used as a kind of fuel. It's used as a pleasure center rather than, ugh, I need this to make myself feel better, or ugh, I don't want that because I'm drinking instead. So the whole shift in my attitude towards food is just, yeah, opposite end of the spectrum, I would say.
I hope you enjoyed that. To remind you to head back to episode 1 on your podcast feed if you'd like to listen to the whole episode. And just to remind you, if you head to my website, louisaevans.com, you will find the Sober Resilience course, where you can use code RESILIENCE544 to get a massive 30% off. That course goes through so many CBT and psychological tools to support your sobriety and your emotional health. It's not just focused on sobriety. These are tools that you can use for any area of your life. You'll also find a range of hypnosis recordings on so many subjects, from confidence boosting through to enjoying exercise or finding weight loss easy, alongside ones to support your sobriety. If you use the code SOBERREBEL, all one word, you'll be able to buy one, get one free on all of those recordings. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests over this last couple of years for their openness and honesty. And the podcast will be back in its regular fortnightly slot very shortly. I'm currently recording some amazing episodes for you. I hope you have a great day.